Okay.
What does this mean?
Jerry Nixon, ladies and gentlemen.
Beautiful. All right. Hi, everybody. Carvana reminds me of Cartana. Remember April Fool's 2 years ago? There was we announced Cortana for Cartana. It was hilarious. Now it's real. It's weird. I'd say every April Fool's joke from this point forward will be real 2 years later. That's the way that works. Cartana. We don't call it Cartana, of course. We just call it Cortana on devices, but still pretty sweet. Let's see. Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry Nixon, and let me fast forward a little bit. So like you said, I live in Colorado. I've lived in Colorado for most of my life, to be honest. And like you, just like you guys, I'm a software developer. I was a software developer from the beginning, right out of college. I started working on, back then it was InterDev. Remember that? Anybody ever see InterDev? Yeah. They just don't make them like they used to, thank goodness, right? And that's the way it was, man. I thought VBScript was going to rule the world. Absolutely. And so, I've lost my savings on VBScript stock, that's for sure. But at the same time, .NET has been the thing. And so when .NET first came out, I was pretty resistant. I was a VB developer. That made me a Visual Basic developer once that graduates to the real world. And then it became VB.NET, and nobody was interested in that. Everybody wanted C#, and I hated them for it. Absolutely hated them for it. I can't believe I have to learn C#. Thank goodness I did. Wow. Talk about another stock that would have been not as performing. That's all I want to say there. Okay, so pretty great. So I love C#. That's where, when .NET Core comes in, we're going to be talking about C#. It's worth saying just now that .NET Core and F# is also supported inside .NET Core. I won't be talking about that. I'm only going to be talking about the C# side of things. I do want to point out a couple of interesting things about me, because that's one of my favorite topics. One of them is, in case a slide deck like this is interesting to you, you're welcome to come get it. Microsoft has their bit.ly, right? It's the aka.ms, that's what we do. And so aka.ms/azgroups, that's where I put all this stuff, and you can go and get it from there. At the same time, I'm the author of Template 10. If inside Windows 10, right, the new world of software development inside Windows 10 is UWP, the Universal Windows Platform. And Template 10 is a Kickstarter for that, kind of a jumpstart template that allows you to get started with applications inside UWP quickly. And so that's how you get to that as well, so that's kind of cool. More about me, though, is I am an enormous Star Trek fan. And I mean, I have the belt on right now, right, the Star Trek belt, and it's just one of those things that I just really get into. My kids get into it, my daughters are all about it, and it's just fun. It's a fun thing, right? It's you can dabble in stuff, but what fun is that? If you can go totally psychotic about it, it's even better. And so we totally do that. Everything is about, I have this awesome video. I wish I pulled it up to share it with you. We're going to Comic-Con in Denver. All my kids are in the back. They're all in uniform. I mean, dads are proud, right? And we're doing like a selfie video, and I tilt it to the side, and we all fall to the side. You know, it's awesome. It's just great. It's just great. I point this out kind of to show really that I'm just proud of this picture. It doesn't really have much to do. It has nothing to do with the talk. But to be very, very clear, I'm a Windows developer. I appreciate the fact that Bash is on Windows, and I realize the value that it brings and why developers like it. It doesn't mean anything to me. I'll just be honest, right? That's not my thing. Every developer is a little bit different. At the same time, I appreciate the fact that Visual Studio Code executes both on Windows, Linux, and Mac. I think that's incredible. Developers can go from environment to environment and have a unified and consistent IDE experience, and they can have an editor that really does rival all the others out there. I think that's really, really cool. It's not all that important to me. My life is spent, I wake up in the morning, and I've got a hotkey right here, right next to the snooze, that says Open Visual Studio. And that is where I live my entire life. Everything is Visual Studio for me. And I love Visual Studio, just like you should. I teach at a lot of schools and universities. So I'll go to some, you know, highfalutin university, and everybody has their Eclipse running, right? And it's just pitiful. And so I say, well, how many people have Visual Studio installed? And, you know, it's a pleasant, look at you guys, all of you do, right? That's great. And I say to this class, much like I did just to you, how many have Visual Studio installed? And half of them will raise their hand, and I'll say, of those, how many installed it today because I was coming, right? And boom, all of them stay up. Nobody actually has it installed. I'm like, wow, you're really missing out on Visual Studio. Let me blow your mind a little bit. This is one of the things that Visual Studio can do. You can edit your code, you can put a breakpoint on a line of code, you can hit F5, and it will run to that line and I can step right through it, right? No add-ins included, right? It just works out of the box. Now, honestly, most of the class is like, ho-hum, that's what everybody does. Then I'm like, and I can start stepping backwards if I want to, right? It's a mess, brains everywhere, right? Everybody's like, wow, that is incredible. I'm like, yeah, Visual Studio is pretty sweet. Your Eclipse is okay. And so it's just neat, yeah? It's just the way that it goes. So who am I? I am the Visual Studio guy. There is a command line interface that we'll talk about in depth, and it is neat. I have to admit, it is neat. There's a lot of stuff you can do on the command line with .NET Core. Is that where I want to live in the command line? No, that is not. I'm a GUI guy, right? I'm not ashamed to admit it, right? All the people, remember back when .NET, remember when NT4, all the IT pros in the world were like, oh boy, all the administrators are going out of job because wizards are going to replace all of IT pros, right? I mean, just fast forward to now, and that's obviously true, right? No, of course it's not. It's ridiculous. But nonetheless, command line, they were like, you've got to go to the command line or you can't get it done. Turns out you can get it done, right? I've gotten a lot done in the GUI. So it's kind of a weird kind of thing. So when I talk about show stuff, when I'm going to get into the demos, I'll do a little bit of the command line because it's important to understand the underlying pieces. And maybe more importantly for you to know that when you're using it inside Visual Studio and all of the GUI operations that are built into Visual Studio for .NET Core, they also call the command line. It's not like there are two APIs and one, and you know, it's not like that. The command line really is the superset of all functionality. The GUI is tapping into that, so it's really, really great. And there are some gaps right now where you'll be able to do more in one, or you'll be able to do more on the command line than you can in the GUI, but that's because it's just coming along. And so we have a lot to talk about .NET Core. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be terrific. Okay, today, announcing. This is not a big reveal because the team is announcing it already, but I'll share it with you because it's pretty awesome. .NET Core, so we're revving all of our tooling around .NET Core inside Visual Studio RC3. And so that means there are several changes coming. We'll talk a little bit about it, and one of them is, no, I don't even want to tell you, because I've got a dedicated slide to it, and I don't want to play favorites to slides like that. Okay, oh, let me back up just to say, I'll be doing all of my demos on RC3 4.5.1.7, released this morning, right? So this is it. So you might say, hey, I already know .NET Core. I think I'm going to go get a second lunch, right? Like at the Hobbits, get a second breakfast. There's no point in doing that. This is all going to be stuff that I guarantee you haven't done because you don't have the insider preview build, right? Or you might. As a mind-blowing thing, Microsoft is slowly shifting to be everything open source. So many of you have actually a lot of insider information just because you follow it on GitHub. You can read through the issues because everything is done in the open now. The code is in the open now. The release plan is in the open now. The functions that are coming in that release plan, they're all there. And so it's weird because I have all the insider information that you also could have and you don't even work for Microsoft. It's pretty neat. It's a brave new world at Microsoft. And honestly, as somebody whose blood genuinely bleeds blue, it is weird for me. It's very, very weird, right? But this new Microsoft is like, it's like wildfire. Everybody loves it, and I can see why they do. It's just a little weird, you know? I understand. I have a tattoo that here says proprietary. So I'm just used to the way that it used to be. Okay, so anyway, there's where we are. Let's talk about what makes up .NET Core. This is the important part. .NET Core, as far as like the recipe to build it, right, there is made of four core pieces, right? And I'm going to use the word core a lot because it just flows. And the first one is CoreFX. And so remember, what was the code name for .NET? Anybody remember? I can't remember either, but FX was in it. What was it? Something FX. Anybody remember? Good gravy, all these code names that I can't remember from 10 years ago. Okay, but CoreFX is the .NET framework for .NET Core. And we'll talk about what that means because I know that as a developer, it's kind of freaky sounding, right? Because remember when WinRT came out, it also had a .NET framework. I'm like, how many .NET frameworks am I really going to have here? And .NET Core, we'll talk about how the .NET standard comes in to make sense of all of this for us. But then we also have the CLI. That's the command line interface, CLI, command line interface. That allows you to go into the command prompt, right? You don't need PowerShell or anything like that. Just go into command prompt, just like you do with Node. How many people here have some familiarity building Node.js? Yeah, that's a bunch. So that familiarity is very handy because at least at a concept level, it's very similar to the way .NET Core works, right? Well, why would we do that? Why would Microsoft go all the way through and say, golly, Node.js already exists. Why would we build out .NET Core that does exactly the same thing? Well, exactly is not the right word, but let's just say it does basically the same thing. Because wouldn't it be great if while you're drowning in an ocean of JavaScript, somebody came along with a lifeboat, right, with a tattoo on the side that said, C sharp. Oh, yeah. So here we come. Here we come to save the day, right? And it's absolutely brilliant. All right, we also have the core CLR. The core CLR, that's the common language runtime. I'll talk about it a little bit more. That is the runtime. If you're a .NET developer, how many people here have ever said file new project to a .NET project? Three? Wait, what? No. Okay. Did I not say that right? How many people here have ever coded in C sharp? Okay, that's it's all about the communication. Okay, great, everybody. Right. We know the joy of C sharp, right? Because it's a manicured language. It's just gorgeous, curated, and just perfect, and it's so nice. And then we go to other languages, and we're like, we always say it's close, right? That's what we want to say. It's almost C sharp. If it's 1 to 10, and 10 being C sharp, where is your language? That's the way I see things, right? I genuinely do. Anyway, so as a .NET developer from all the way back, I understand the pipeline of how to build an application, what happens to intermediary language, how it goes to just-in-time compile, and how it runs inside a runtime. And we'll talk about it a little bit so that we can all be on the same page. .NET Core has the exact same thing, right? .NET Core is the same thing. If I got points for every time I say the word core in this talk, it's going to be off the charts. All right. Core RT is a little bit different. Core RT also stands for runtime, right? However, it is not a common language runtime like you would expect and like we have for the .NET runtime. Instead, it is a packageable runtime that can ship with your application. We'll talk more about that too. So 1, 2, 3, 4, these are the things that we'll cover one piece at a time. So I have some just eye candy on the side. This is where all the work actually gets done. And so let's talk about the goals of CoreFX. Remember, that's the framework, the CoreFX. So right, first thing, just like the .NET framework already does for you, CoreFX also abstracts the platform, right? I need to say file.io.savefile or whatever it is, right? And I don't want to figure out, am I on a Mac? Am I on Unix? Am I on Windows? No. I just want a common API surface that I can have against all the different platforms, and that's what it gives me first off. It also is authentically .NET. We haven't changed .NET. This is still .NET. I'm a C# developer, and I know the BCL. In fact, I've spent my entire career memorizing the BCL and all of its little intricacies and which interface does this and how to do this and the special switches to do that. It's awesome. I don't want to lose that value that I've already poured into my career. What an investment. And now I can still use it, right? This is still authentically .NET the way that you expect it to be. Also, it's open source. I talked about it just a little bit, but that's because now that we do everything in the open, that's good for a lot of reasons. I know that enterprises enjoy being able to review and do security reviews of source code. That's a great deal, right? Only the biggest partners ever had access to source code before. Now everybody does. You wonder how Integer is implemented? Just go check it out. Talk about a learning opportunity. There's even an extension inside Visual Studio, I forget what it's called all of a sudden, where you could hit special keystroke F12, and instead of taking you to the object browser of it and the definition of it, it takes you out to the GitHub site and takes you to the actual implementation of it. It's really incredible, absolutely incredible. And then finally, we're gonna support NSL. NSL, the .NET standard library, right? And so this is where sense comes to all this mess, right? We know that we have a lot of different frameworks. We know that each framework points and has different purposes and intents, but wouldn't it be nice if there was some sort of commonality between it? Now we're gonna have commonality, and we're not gonna solve it the way we did with PCLs, because PCLs did something funny for us, and I'll kind of talk about that pain in just a minute. Okay, so let's think about how we define and came up with the .NET Core. And I think this will just help, right? This is not the official slide. This is the Jerry slide to just try and get through the concept with us. So this is the .NET framework, that bar going across the top. Everything that we know, building a WPF application, a WinForms application, something on the desktop, that can do anything, absolutely anything. And so when we look at it, it's really made up of components, right? And we could call those namespaces, to be fair. And so if I had a name, if I had each of those pieces, wouldn't it be great, instead of one gigantic framework, I broke those out into little pieces? Yeah, that'd be really, really nice. So that's what we've done. And so let's bring those down and identify which piece really belongs to which. So the first two over here are OS specific, right? Now, if I'm going to implement that and I'm on Windows, I'm going to have to do something special. It's not something special or unique to Windows. That's over here in the orange section. That's Windows only, right? Maybe like WCF or something like that. That's Windows only. But over here, I have to do file implementation and interact with the file system, interact with the network stack. That's going to be specific to whichever platform I'm on. Over here is the stuff that happens only on Windows, But then I have this gigantic green section, this gigantic set of common logic that really could be reused over and over. And so which part of this really makes sense to make .NET Core? Well, what I would do is I'd pull down all of it except for the stuff that's Windows only, because one of the goals of .NET Core is that it's going to be able to run on any platform. So I'll take the stuff that's Windows only, and I'll create .NET Core out of all of the rest. And then I can go in and I can say, now what about this blue section? It's going to cause some problems. So I'm going to have to make it so the implementation of like file I/O is going to be a little more significant, or the networking stack. And so here's where we share the code. So look at the blue section first. The blue section is all that logic that implements, in this case, this is system.net.http. So this is just a point in time a little while ago, just to give you a sense of shared code inside .NET Core and how it's implemented. Now, in order to make this work, we start with all the base implementation that's blue. That's very important. Now we have the logic, and it's going to be consistent across all the different platforms. However, if I'm going to make this work on Windows, then I absolutely need this bottom orange section. It won't work otherwise. It's very, very special. Well, if I'm going to make this work on Linux, I'm going to need that little gray section up there, right? And that's important, too. And if I'm going to make this work on Mac, then I'm going to need this yellow section. And the idea is this is the entire implementation of this namespace. And in order to get this namespace out the door, I write all of these, knowing that when I'm in the Windows platform, I'm only going to be executing all of the blue in this orange section. And when I'm on Linux, I'm going to only be executing all of the blue in this gray section, and kind of go from there. And so now, whose responsibility is to make sure that it works on all those different platforms properly? It's ours. Right? That's the reason this is a unique implementation, because this is full enterprise support from Microsoft. We're going to make sure that it actually works. Now, it's worth pointing out that there are some things that aren't awesome here, because there are going to be, let's just say, all the functionality is 100%. There's going to be this 1% use case where no matter what you do, in all reality, that's not how Unix does it. Right? It just doesn't work that way. I'm really glad the .NET Framework has this implementation. But once you're running on Unix, that piece isn't going to happen. Let me give you an example. One of the things I can do inside my console is I can set the color. That's great. In Windows, one of the things I can do is I can ask for that color. One of the things I cannot do in Unix is ask for that color. Okay, big deal. Yeah, that's just a simple example. But what happens when I ask for that color through the .NET Framework using .NET Core on Linux? Then I get a platform not supported, right? So that's just an example, and it's a very small set of use cases that genuinely I think most of you will not hit. However, we have to account for those different pieces all the way through. When it comes to Windows, we know it'll work, right? All the others, we had to make these little caveats and these edge cases the way they were. Okay, let's go back just for a second to the standard. So I think the .NET standard is going to be an important addition to your vocabulary. Right now, if you were writing a PCL, right, why would you write a PCL, portable class library? We've all written class libraries, right? It's just C# that executes and we can share it across projects, great. But what if those projects targeted different platforms? That's the issue. Now all of a sudden, I've actually written my class library to target this platform or this framework, and then I want to use it on this project that targets a different framework, but I can't because those are incompatible frameworks. So the PCL was invented to say, well, there's two different frameworks. Let's say it's .NET 4 and .NET 5, just for argument's sake. And we just think about those as a Venn diagram, and whatever is in the middle is shared by both of them. That's PCL format 1. Let's just say. And so I say, okay, I want format 1 and I write it to it. And they're like, well, now wait a minute. I also want to support .NET 2. Okay, well, we're going to put that on the Venn diagram. And now it's just got smaller, quite a bit smaller, actually. And the lowest common denominator across all the portable class libraries now is just a handful of things. You know, maybe even lose like .2 string, whatever it is. But it's just so much smaller, and I'm used to this big thing. But that's the way PCLs always worked, right? And it gets smaller and smaller. The standard works a little different. The standard instead says, across all the platforms, what is the API surface we want to give developers? Well, let's start with what we actually have. So we'll begin with just an evaluation of all the different platforms and say, here it is. But that's not enough. It's simply not enough. We see that small common denominator, and we realize that it has to add this little piece over here. So I'm going to say, okay, so everything that is across all the platforms, terrific, plus these things that we know are very important. Now, what does that mean? It means that these other platforms don't qualify as the new .NET standard 1 that we just created together, right? We're like, well, that is really important. Let's include it. So from this point forward, now all the different platforms will strive to comply to the standard. So now, let's say .NET Desktop is now being revved to the next version so that it can comply with the .NET Standard 1. Great. And let's say, like, .NET Core. .NET Core is now revving, so it can comply to .NET Standard 1. That's great. And then let's say UWP is, no, I guess that's .NET Core. I'm trying to think of another one real quick, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. But as all the different frameworks begin to raise up, they do that so they can comply with whatever the standard is. Meanwhile, all of us are on the standard team. And we're like, we did a great job with Standard 1. But Standard 1.1 needs to include special method this and special method that. And that's really important too, because now I want to make sure that it's more valuable than before. And instead of reacting to what is the overlap for all these platforms, instead we're saying, hey, platforms, you need even more. You need this. And now the next version of the platform of the framework says, now we're also compliant with .NET Standard 1.1 because we've added those other methods. And so now as developers, we no longer say, okay, I'm going to create a class library and I'm going to target profile one of PCL, because that's a mess. Instead, I say, I'm going to create a class library. I'm going to create a project that's a website. I'm going to create a project that's a UWP application. I'm going to create a project that's whatever. And I'm going to make sure that I'm targeting whatever the platform is, .NET Standard 1, or .NET Standard 1.1, or .NET Standard whatever. And my platform raises up to whatever that standard is. So it's kind of a different way of looking at it. Instead of reacting to what the actual overlap is, instead I'm saying, push those platforms to be more. And it's really great. And so the .NET standard library is not a new PCL type. It is just a standard that includes interfaces that allows you to define what the surface area is going to be for that project and framework. OK, versus the portable class library. And think about it. We're all on the team, right? The .NET standard library is curated by us. It's going to be sensible, right? If you think about the machine-generated PCL standard, it wasn't sensible. It was what it was. Whatever the overlap was is where it went. So we have to get away from that, and now we're going into the .NET standard. So you'll see in the future a move away from PCLs and instead moving towards class libraries that are targeting the .NET standard. Okay. This might be interesting to you. That's hilarious. All right, let's see. Wow, that's really challenging. We can't have that because I have all kinds of insane demos to show you. So we can't have that. I'm going to change the resolution here to make sure this is beautiful for you. And I'll bet the right resolution will be 1080. Yeah. Look at that. 1081? No, just kidding. 1920 by 1080. Nice. I don't want you guys to miss out, right? It's too much. All right. There we go. All kinds of exciting things are running. Try not to look ahead, because where would the secrets be? All right. So I'm going to jump to this website. I guess I was already on it. I'm going to jump to this website just so you guys can see kind of how this is David Fowler. He's on the team. He's just a smart guy. He's really made it simple for you to be able to visualize it. And part of it is this is standard 1.0. And this is standard 1.1, right? And so 1.0 has these different pieces that we know are guaranteed. And just like an interface, it's a contract that says, we guarantee this is going to be on anything that claims to be standard 1. And then right here, this is standard 1.1, which it, of course, right, would inherit from 1.0. And then it would add to the functionality just like we talked about. And then what about 1.2? Of course would inherit from 1.1. which inherits from 1.0. So it's additive the whole way along. And so as we look at the standard and the standard gets better, it starts increasing the surface area and making it more and more, rather than as PCL starts to support more and more platforms, it got smaller and smaller. We don't want that to happen, right? Great. OK. Oh, I'm glad we did that. You know what? I didn't show you this because I'm talking so much. But it's a, let's see, did I have the, oh, I don't have the link. We'll have to come back to that. Sorry, what was I talking about? You'd never know. Okay, let's keep going because there's a lot to go here. So, back to the command line interface for .NET Core, the CLI, right? And so it had a lot of goals as well. If we're going to create a command line interface, it's got to do some stuff, and it was going to be special, right? Not quite like the Node CLI. We were going to make it so that with that, it's a way to get started. Because if you've ever been on a campus trying to teach .NET to anybody, right? C# is a wonderful language, and it's great to teach. But you can't even start to teach anything until you explain the project structure. It's very complex, right? It's very complex. Getting started with that first line of code is pretty challenging. What do you think of that? Thank you, Crystal. That's really great. I'm starting to feel like I should have closed Skype. What do you think? Yep, that's terrific. Yep, only because I'm a professional. Silliness. I seriously have no idea where it is. All right, there we go. All right, now we're back to it. See, the guys in the back have my back. That's nice. You have no idea the mess that's going on right now. There's no mess. Okay, back at it. Oh, ridiculous. Crystal. What was I even talking about? Oh yeah, .NET Core. Okay, so we want a place to be able to get started, right? It's very difficult to get started in .NET because we have to understand the projects. The solution is a container for projects. The project's a container for files, and it has a project file, and blah, 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 blah. Wouldn't it be great if it was a little bit more simple, almost like a REPL, but we can't go quite that far. So now I can say .NET new, and it'll give me that initial layout so I can get started immediately. That's great. I don't need another tool. I don't need to make sure I have Visual Studio installed, Visual Studio Code, or anything like that. It's one of the features of the command line interfaces allows me just to get started. So I get hello world right out of the gate and start coding. That's what I want. The other thing is I want to be able to compile with this. Obviously, it's important. So I can compile both natively and I can compile directly to IL, right? We know IL is the way we go into the runtime, and natively is how I go down to the machine. I can do either one. That's really important, and we'll talk about the details about it. I also need to be able to talk to NuGet, pull down all of the dependencies that I know that I need. And so one of the things I was going to show you, but I didn't, was there's a website. Of course there's a website. GitHub has the .NET framework, and then NuGet has all of the .NET packages. And each namespace, not every namespace, but most namespace groupings are individual packages, which means I can go in and bring down individually. Now, to a developer, this is all transparent. You just say, I want the framework, but little do you know, you're getting a billion little tiny little, not a billion, but like tons of small NuGet packages behind the scenes, which gives me the future opportunity to say, but not this one, and not that one, and not that one, so that I can rev that to the next version without waiting for the entire framework, and it also allows me to reduce my footprint if I ever need to. Does that make sense? It's pretty cool, and I need to be able to restore those dependencies in order for it to work. That's built into the command line interface, kind of invisible to you. I also need to be able to publish it and prepare it for when I'm going to give it to my end user so that it works, so that everything can be done. And I need to be able to also move things into NuGet as well, because the process going from a class library to NuGet requires, you know, it requires your new spec to be generated. It requires your NupKeg, right, your NuGet package, to be packaged, and then moved on in. Now, wouldn't it be great if that was built into the command line interface? And it is. And so those are the key pieces. And there's more that it can do, but this is definitely some of the key pieces you can do it. Okay, and I mentioned this before, but this is an important thing to say, that you're not bypassing anything by using Visual Studio. It uses the command line interface as well. So if you're going to install this, where does it begin? We're talking about zero to hero right now, and that's because I'm going to assume you don't know anything about .NET Core, and I think that's great, right? There was a time when I didn't know anything about .NET Core. And so right here, we can go to Microsoft.net/core. That's where you download it. I can install just for Windows, and when I do, I can install one of these three options, Visual Studio or the command line option. So Visual Studio 2015, 2017, or the command line option. I can go right here and install it, and the SDK is installed, and I'm ready to go. If I go to the command line option, all I'm really getting is a folder in my .NET subfolder in program files, right? It just says, here they are, whatever it is that you want. So I have preview 4. Preview 4 is now RC3. And as of today, it was preview 4 on Friday, or yesterday, or this morning early. And so anyway, you just get it right there. You get to see everything that's there. It's nothing special, right? Not too tricky. You just get it there. And if you decide that you want it inside Visual Studio, it's the same sort of thing, but you don't have to install it for Visual Studio starting now. Starting now, whenever I install Visual Studio, it gives me the option to do .NET Core cross-platform development. I check that, and the SDK gets installed for me, right? And that's the way it's going to be when we RTM Visual Studio as well. So you shouldn't have to go download the SDK unless you need it after the fact and you forgot to check this, or you don't want to go into the repair. Has anybody installed the new Visual Studio 2017 and experienced the speed of install? Wow, it is so great, because Visual Studio 2015 was a nightmare. I'm like, oh my gosh. If I forgot anything to install, I'm like, well, there goes your day. I mean, it's so bad, right? It's incredible. We know it's true. We laugh because can't believe I said it on stage. All right. All right, what's the command line interface look like for .NET's core? This is it. You say .NET, and it starts to run, right? Everything else is after that. Now, .NET, this is basically the driver that takes commands, and it does all the driving. And I want to talk through some of the core commands that are important to us. So the first one is like new, restore, build, run, publish, and pack. Once you understand what those do in .NET Core, you will be enabled to do anything that you want. The important thing to take away from this, though, is this is just like an app, right? It's just like an application you write today. It just happens to be using .NET Core under the hood. This isn't some massive, oh my gosh, what is it? This is just .NET like you know. It just is .NET Core so that it has not the Windows-specific stuff, so that it can run side-by-side other applications that use .NET Core and target different frameworks, so that it can run on different sorts of platforms like Linux and Mac. That's terrific, right? That's what we're trying to solve. That's what this does for us. We don't lose the stuff we know and love. That's for sure. It just happens to be, by the way, because this is a somewhat subset, it's actually in a way superset of .NET Desktop now, because all of the innovation goes here now and then gets moved into the .NET framework that we know. So in a way, it's a little bit of a superset, but it's more of a subset. It's so familiar, right? There's just nothing missing in your mind. It's really terrific. All right, let's go through them one by one. .NET new, what does that mean? I say .NET new, enter, the end, no extra anything behind it, and all of a sudden I get the project that I need, right? It creates it for me, just the minimal files to get started out of the gate. That's really great. If you're the kind of person that likes to edit files on the command prompt, go for it. This is your starting point. You don't need to use .NET for anything else, you know, maybe to restore your dependencies and things like that. It has other project types other than just the basic, right? And the only one you really need to notice, the only two you really need to notice are that I can use web, which is terrific, right? I can go web. I can go library, which is instead of console application, I'm creating a class library. Or I can go to unit test, so that's four. The only four you need to check, pay attention to, are those four. And so, and XUnit. So the five that you need to pay attention to here are console, web, library, MS test, which a lot of enterprises have standardized on MS Test, and XUnit Test, which a lot of developers love XUnit Test, so it makes sense to include those as well. And it's just that beginning set of files, right? I hesitate to say the word scaffolding, because scaffolding interacts with you almost like a wizard and does all this stuff for you. It's really just a dump of files to get you started with Hello World with one of these types. So that's .NET new. And if I'm inside Visual Studio, I get to do the exact same thing by saying File New Project. Over here, I can say .NET Core underneath C#, and it gives me those same options, right, that I can go and add those as well. I get the same files. I get the same experience. I just get to do the whole thing through the IDE that I live in anyway. So it's kind of up to you, but we're talking about the CLI, so don't pay attention to the GUI right now. The next step is restore. .NET Restore. What does .NET Restore give you? It gives you all the stuff in NuGet that you don't have now. So you have gone ahead and said, these are my dependencies. I'm going to use Newtonsoft JSON, for example. It goes for you out to NuGet, pulls those down, and adds them to your project so you can use it like you would expect. That's great. How else would you do it? Well, you could open up Visual Studio, and it would do it. But what are you going to do on the command line? This is the one and only way. So this is often a forgotten step when people are playing with .NET Core. They'll say .NET Core new. Bam, and they'll get their little files, and they're ready to go with Hello World, and they'll naturally say .NET space, run, and it doesn't work. They're like, .NET Core's broken. Well, no, it's not. You just haven't restored yet. So all you have to do is bring those dependencies down. So I say .NET new, .NET restore, .NET run, everything is fine, right? Easy to forget that restore, because those dependencies aren't just there. You have to bring those in. Now, the nice thing is, I go out to NuGet, bring those down, and it also puts it into a local cache, right? So I don't have to go out to NuGet every single time. I don't want that to happen when I do a restore. All right, that's a great picture, isn't it? That's great. There was another one I didn't pick that had two jets, one on each wing. Oh my gosh, it was amazing. Anyway, I don't know what that has to do with this. Okay. So, how many people have learned about the changes to NuGet and understand, at least at a high level, the concept of the project.json file? All right, so project.json is the JSON description of all the dependencies in your application, and the JSON lock file is the full dependency graph. Well, that's convenient, but turns out project.json actually doesn't scale for us. It works great for certain types of projects. It doesn't work great for every kind of project. We need a solution that developers can count on to be consistent across all the different project types, so that when you open up your solution, The way you did it here, the way you did it here, the way you did it here are the same in all those different projects, of course. We know that that used to work in CSproj, right? CSproj, that's the project file for CS projects. We know that that's the way we did it. All the dependencies were jammed in there as crazy XML, and all the files were listed. I'm sure you guys have opened it up, and in fear, right, made a tiny change. It's almost like opening up regedit, like, okay, I'm just going to reread the instructions one more time. I mean, it's terrifying, and then you close it, you reload your application, and it doesn't work, right? And you have to say, file new project, copy it all over again. We've all been there, right? That's the way, it's terrifying when you look at the CSproj file. So one of the things that has happened is we're no longer going to be chasing project.json. Now we're moving back to CSproj. And in order to do that, we don't want to take all the gains that we had in project.json and throw them away. We want to be able to do that, but do it in CSproj. And so that's what we've done. We've changed the specification for CSproj. And you'll see this when I give you a demo. When you look at CSproj, it will blow your mind. There is nothing there. One of the biggest changes we made was so that we don't list every file anymore, right? Now, if you're going to add a file explicitly inside CSproj, it's because you're going to exclude it, not because you're going to include it, right? Why didn't we do that in the first place? I don't know. Another cool thing, so here's a project. This is right-clicking the console project and going down to edit CSproj. Of course, we've all seen this before, right? What do you have to do before you edit the CSproj? You have to unload it. Look at you guys, so smart. That's exactly right, and what a nuisance, right? Because then, after you've edited it, what do? We reload it, right? Ah, wouldn't it be great if you could only edit the CSproj real time without having to reload? That's what we can do now, right? That's part of our C3 changes. And so I can make those changes, and I'll demo that to you too, because it is like mind-splittingly cool to watch. All right. Cool feature there. There are a lot of GUIDs. We've taken all of those things out. And we also have a framework identifier that allows multiple frameworks. It used to be that drop-down, and you would say, OK, it's going to be this framework, or that framework, or that framework, right? That was your only option. Now we can have multiple frameworks inside a single CSproj. It's a big deal. And you might think about, instead of frameworks, you might also think about, RID. What does it stand for? Resource identifier? RID. What does it stand for? RID resource. This always happens when you're in front of people talking. Resource identifiers? Whatever. You guys, you're not helping me at all. Why are you guys here? I happen to have it written down right here because it's the two things, runtime identifier. Okay, so RIDS. Hey, these are all new acronyms for all of us. We have TLAs for everything. RID stands for runtime identifier, and so now I can add semicolon all the different runtime identifiers. What would be an example? Windows 10 is a runtime identifier. Windows 10 x64, let's say. I can also say semicolon iOS, semicolon OS X, semicolon, and then go from there, right? And all my Linux ones as well. And so pretty cool. I can have all that in a single project file. All those definitions are in place. Rather than, if you've ever seen how that's actually done inside project.json, it gets pretty complicated fast. So we've actually made it better, and we move back in. And all the tooling now is caught up with the new direction that we're going. And you might be thinking, wow, are you guys ever going to make up your mind which direction you're going with this stuff? Yeah, we just did. So now we're done. OK. I mean that in a good way. Prior to project.json, we had project.config. That was the XML way, right? Boy, if anything has fallen out of favor with the universe, it is XML. I mean, can you think of anything worse than XML? JSON, maybe, but that's about it. Anyway, so we go from packages.config, right, which is the XML way, to project.json. And now we're going back to, and we're calling it package reference, basically everything that's going on inside CSproj. And so we also have a migration tool. If you guys went that direction, don't worry. You're not out cold, and you have to do it all from scratch. We have the migration tool to do it for you as well. This is inside Visual Studio to handle it for you. The next command inside .NET CLI is build, right? And so this does exactly what you think it does, right? Control-Shift-B inside Visual Studio. That's my keystroke. F6, which is not my keystroke, I don't do that, but I know that it does it. F10 apparently does it too, and then breaks at the first point. Pretty cool. But all that said, build is right there as well, which means I don't have to open a tool. It just goes in, reads the project file, understands all the runtimes that I have there, and builds them all out for me. It's really nice. It's really, really nice. It does not, by the way, I'm glad I put that up there because that's a good point. This does not invoke restore. So that's just the getcha, right? Everybody has that one moment where they're like, oh, didn't restore. Okay. The next is .NET Run. All right, so .NET Run, this is what I wanted. All this time, I said new, and there it is. I said restore, brought it in my NuGet packages. I said build, there it is, ready to go. Why didn't it execute? Here's this. .NET Run. Now, I could skip build and go straight to run. It will actually call build for me and give me a fresh executable. And then when I run that, it'll invoke it for me. It'll execute the project and host the process for me. So if I'm on Linux, it's the same thing, and it'll host it for me there. If I'm on a Mac, it's the same thing, and it'll host it for me there as well, right? .NET, the driver, will do all the hosting for me, and you can see it inside Process Manager when you look at it. And you can name it, too, which is pretty cool. The next is .NET Publish. .NET Publish is the command that gets it ready to give to somebody. So this is where I can say things. This is release mode. Did everybody know that you can move from debug mode to release mode? Yeah, it's weird. There's a dropdown in Visual Studio. Should I be a great demo, right? Wow, there's a lot of Visual Studio telemetry out there, so you guys can hide all you want and say, that's not me, but I know what's going on. I'm like, we should drop it to release, I think, because the PDBs are there. Anyway, that all being said, that's what publish does, right? That final build gives you your DLL, gives you your EXE or whatever it is that executes the way it's supposed to. You can have debug as well with all your PDBs included, right? PDB stands for, what's the P in PDB? Project or program? Is it program database? It's got all your symbols in it, right? Allows you to debug. Thanks. If I had any gift certificates from the Fed, they would be yours, but I can't do that. I do want to talk real quick about the two types of packages. The first one is let's start with just the self-contained, because I think that's better. A self-contained says, I don't expect you to have anything installed on this machine. Nothing. And unlike a .NET application that says, before you can install this application, you need to download and install .NET Framework 3.0, right? We've all seen that. That doesn't happen. A self-contained says, you don't have the .NET Framework? I brought it with me. No problem. Where am I going to put it? I'm going to put it in my application folder. Everything's right here. I can run by myself, no problem, right? That's self-contained, and it's brilliant. And if you think about things like microservices, so Rob's going to be coming on after me, and he's going to be talking about containers and microservices and blow your guys' mind. And when he does, one of the things that allows that to even happen is not relying on the environment to have certain things installed, right? So I can ship all this with me and say, this microservice, I need to quickly duplicate it over here, but does that machine have what I need? Doesn't matter. I'll just take it, put it there. Everything is there because I ship it with it. It's all self-contained. That's pretty brilliant, right? At the same time, you might think, well, that's a little bit overkill, Jerry, because I do have it installed. Well, okay, great. If you do have it installed and side by side, you don't need different frameworks or whatever, great. You can do a shared model as well. So it's just up to you, the developer. You know your app. I don't know your app. You get to decide what's best for you, right? We're not deciding it for you. The next is .NET Pack. This is great. We talked just a bit about this. This creates the NupKeg for you. This creates the NuGet package for you that you can upload to NuGet.org, or you can use this to upload to NuGet.org for you as well, whatever is right for you. Or if you don't use NuGet.org, hopefully all of you know that you can install NuGet locally, use it as if it's NuGet, but it's a local instance of NuGet inside your enterprise, allowing your development team to share code through that interface. It's really, really great. Keeping it all inside the walls, making sure everything is safe and secure, but you're still using the same sort of mechanism that is already built into Visual Studio and this driver. Pretty cool. Okay, don't confuse pack and publish. Right? Pack is the idea of creating the NuGet package. Push is the idea of creating that app bundle you're going to give out to the desktop to run. Right? That's the difference between those two. OK, just as a reminder, this is not everything in the command line interface. This is everything you really need to get started. And I could probably have dropped NuGet and maybe even publish, to be honest. And you would get the gist of how to get started with .NET Core. Look, you just say .NET new, and you get the files you need. .NET Restore, it pulls it down from NuGet for you, and .NET Run, and you've got Hello World, right? It's right there. From that point, what is it? What do you do then? What's the .NET Core tooling for that? Nothing. Now you start writing your program, right? You got to open up your CS file and start coding. Whatever it is that you need to do, that's the way it is. One thing to know about .NET Core across all the different platforms that's important to know is that it's not a UI. It's headless, right? It's not meant for UI. Like, what about WPF for the Mac? Well, no, that's not a secret project we're going to announce today. That is not going on. .NET Core is really about executing your code, getting your logic running. Think more like Windows Service anywhere, right? It doesn't even have to be Windows. Just call it X Service. That's what they should call it. Okay, there we go. Those are the commands. But wait, there's more. So here I am. This is me on the USS Intrepid. I'm behind the camera. And you can see this is the Enterprise. This is probably the closest to the Starship Enterprise that there really is, right? Didn't go to space, which is the, but it's okay, right? This is the Space Shuttle Enterprise, but there's more. The secret is down here. You see the crazy colors? What is that down there? Could that be the Galileo shuttle from the fictional Enterprise? Totally is. We went around to the other side. Look at that. That is insanely awesome. The Galileo shuttle under the real Enterprise. It's brilliant. Anyway, that's like nerddom. It doesn't really matter. What's it have to do with .NET Core? Really nothing. Okay. Let's talk about the CLR. So we're .NET developers. We know how .NET works. I just had a panic moment that I don't have a clock anywhere. Am I doing all right on time? It's nothing but thumbs up, so I think that's great. All right, because I've only got about 20 more slides. All right, the CLR works just like any other .NET. So how does .NET work? All right, so let's start over here. How many people know C++ developers? Right? They're easy to spot, right? They're always kind of frowning, right? They're miserable. And they're actually over here, right? They're like, driver dot, right? Oh, God, it's terrible. No, it's not driver dot, it's driver dash. And anyway, so there's a wall here. And now we're at the C# developers. They're easy to spot, right? They're the ones humming a lot. And I mean, it's nice, right? And so here we are. I'm writing my C# or whatever the .NET language is. And I say build. What is the result of a build from any .NET language? The intermediary language, right? We used to call it MSIL, the Microsoft intermediary language. Then we dropped our own name because it was a little haughty. Now it's just IL. And so we start with C# and it goes to IL, which is the same for any .NET language. That's where we begin the universal side of it, right? So let's say it's Visual Basic .NET and I compile, it's the same IL. That's what's cool about it. So now I've got the IL. The IL is sitting there and says, okay, I'm ready to execute. Now I'm going to execute way over here on the desktop, which is running the .NET runtime, but I am not there yet, right? I have the IL and I'm like, take me to the next step. So I go over here. JIT runs, right? Just in time. So IL can't execute. It doesn't know all the, it doesn't know how to talk to a chipset. Doesn't know, right? But just in time does, right? Now all of a sudden I can get down to machine language. I'm not talking directly to chipset because I have a runtime still, right? But now I've just in time compiled it down. Right? And it's tighter, faster, better. And there's a little bit of lag right here. And many of us will use Engine to kind of skip that step and make it so it's we bypass JIT. But most of us don't, right? Just like most of us don't go to release. And so then over here, we have the runtime. And the runtime says, I'm ready to execute your code, but I'm not executing IL. I'm executing only this bytecode. Bring it on over. And now, just like an egg in a nest, right? Just like an egg in a nest, your code is executing inside a container that does all the work for you. Just like the egg has no idea how to stick to a limb, your code has no idea how to talk to the chipset directly. But that's because the runtime does, and the runtime is there for you. The upside to a runtime is it makes your job easy, makes it so much more straightforward for you to get things done. However, a runtime always will introduce two things, right? It must execute, which means it's going to have a performance impact. And it must be in memory, so it's going to impact memory as well. There's no getting past it. Even as we make .NET better and better and better, the .NET CLR is still going to have that. So we might want another way, and that's what we're going to talk about too. So we'll start with the CLR. This process, this pipeline from there to here, still true. That's the way we do it. It's nice, lean, fast, awesome, great, and you're done, right? That is terrific. What if you wanted to make it so that it goes against the machine, though? What if you wanted to make this as lean as possibly possible? That's where CoreRT comes in. CoreRT is, now, I'm a UWP developer as well, right? Universal Windows Platform. One of the great things about UWP is those, just like those C++ developers over there, somehow manage to make their applications so fast, right? And then they kind of scoff at me, the C# developer. Now I can use the same C++ optimizer to compile my C# code straight to the machine. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Do I have identical performance to their C++ code? It's pretty close. Yeah, it's pretty close. That's not identical, but I don't want to talk about that much. But all right, so it's close, right? I mean, why is it close? Because I just said no more runtime. I want to go straight on down. But what does the runtime give me that I can't give up? Garbage collection. That's the reason they are really chewing on their pencils, is because they don't have garbage collection. They got to track every object that they create. Me, I create objects in for loops, man. I don't even think twice about it. Like, bam. You do it too, I know, right? Why? Because garbage collection comes in. I got a colleague, Adam Tulifer. He's like, you know why objects that are about to be garbage collected have such bad breath? It's because they're all out of scope. It's that bad. Yeah, it's that bad. Yeah. That's why I had to say his name ahead of time. Anyway, so now I've got .NET Native. .NET Native all the way down, and I attach to it garbage collection. Right? I don't lose things like type safety and the stuff I know and love. In fact, as the .NET developer, I don't have to think, am I going to be native or am I going to be in the runtime? I just get either one, and it all is handled for me transparently. I still get the same love. Right? That's really great. And we're going to see, as the future goes, right, this idea of native compilation is going to be very important. Very important for you and for me. It's going to be important for performance. It's going to be important for memory. Man, is it going to be important for memory? And it's going to be just important for everything all the way around. Does it mean we're dropping the CLR? Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? You know how many billions of dollars have been invested not only in the CLR itself, but in line of business applications that run our economy? No way we could drop the CLR. Are you crazy? No way. And often, that's still the absolute best way to build an application. It's just nice now, because I've got to run this on a Raspberry Pi and there's no room for a CLR. I've got another way around it, right? It's nice, I got to run this on a HoloLens. I got to run this on my phone. I got to run this on my watch. Can I do it? Yeah, because I've got native.NET compilations. Pretty sweet. Or inside a container or a microservice or whatever. So it's pretty terrific. Okay, well, let's open up Visual Studio. Here's the guy up on stage saying he opens Visual Studio constantly and he hasn't opened it yet. That's terrific. All right, I'm going to go over to, let's see. Can't do it that way until I do this. All right. Okay, can you see my screen? No. Okay, can you see my screen? Not yet. Okay, I think maybe because it switched over. Did it change resolution maybe? Is everything okay? Can you guys? I'm not sure. Uh-oh, this is important because this is sweet. There, now you can. Still nothing? Let me make sure that, how about this? All right, good, good. All right, very nice. This is a command prompt. All right, who would have guessed we'd be back here already at a command prompt? Oh, but here we are. It's crazy. All right, so I'm gonna delete my X folder because that's where we're gonna start. Actually, let's just I'll make a directory of Phoenix. Let's see, it's O-E-N-I-X. There we go. I spelled it wrong. You know what? At least it's in front of a lot of people, but it is recorded. Oh gosh, ridiculous. All right. Change directory to Phoenix. There we go. Okay. Nothing up my sleeve. Completely empty folder ready to go. We're going to do hello world. But I'm going to throw a kink at you. I'm going to do hello world in Node.js. No kidding. All right, so here we go. I have Node already installed. It installs just like .NET Core. You just install their SDK and it's ready to go. So I will create a JavaScript file. And then wash my hands and we're going to do the rest of the demo. So I'm going to say echo console.console.log. All right, hello PX. All right, there we go. Is that Phoenix? Is that what you guys, that's your symbol? PHX. Yeah, well, accuracy is important. That looks weird, doesn't it? That looks really weird. We're going to leave that. All right, demo.js. Boom. All right, now let's see what's in the folder. We have this JS file. If I were to type it, it'd be demo.js. There we go. And that's it. Now, this is enough JavaScript to actually execute inside Node. What is Node doing? Node creates a host, right? Takes JavaScript outside of the browser and creates a host for it so that it can execute almost like a Windows service does. In fact, that Windows service then can listen to HTTP ports and act as if it's as a web server even. And more than that, you can start adding all this functionality into it as well. So it has almost MVC componentry inside it, so it feels like a real website that you're creating. People do this all the time. Do enterprises use this on their servers all the time? I don't know. But this is how it works, right? That's all that matters here. So all I say is node demo.js and go, hello Phoenix, right? No applause necessary. This is the way Node just works, right? Now, let's see. I'm going to delete the JS file because you know why. So here we are, back to blank. I want to say new in .NET. So here's .NET. I have it installed. You can see it's there. All the stuff comes up. I can say .NET dash dash or dash V for version. Wait, .NET dash dash version. Let's do it that way. Right, you can see I have RC3 installed. That's the one we're doing. That's the one that was released today. And so I can start by, let's start by moving me to the top so it's neat looking. And I could say .NET, what's the first thing we would do? New. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if I look at dirt, if I look at the contents of this folder, I have two files. I have that csproj file. Let's start by looking at that csproj file. Type, let's see, Phoenix, oh boy, Phoenix csproj. There we go. So how many people expected this, right? This is ridiculous. There are two items in the entire csproj. I would be willing to go in. It's worth it. It's worth it. If I were to add another file to the folder, it would automatically be included during the build as well. It's really true. And in fact, I'm going to stick to the plan here. All right, so I wouldn't be afraid to edit this. I mean, I don't know what any of those things mean, but I wouldn't be afraid to go in and edit these now. That'd be terrific. I will edit it. All right, but not yet. .NET. All right, so what's the next thing you must do in .NET Core in order to be successful? Restore, right? There are things that are necessary. This empty folder is not enough. I mean, who are we teasing each other? All right, restore. All right, this won't take very long, except for it's a demo, so it probably will. But it, wow, fantastic, yes. All right, let's see what we added. We added the obj folder. Now, if I were to go into the obj folder, which let's do that. Let's use Visual Studio Code, which, by the way, is wonderfully fast. I really do like it. I've associated it to a lot of file types now because I just really like it better than opening up Visual Studio. Code dot will open it right there inside that. Can I show you guys something? This has nothing to do with .NET Core. All right, I just want to show you. I want to show you something. Here I am in the. This is the file explorer, and look, I'm in, let's just make it a really, and that's not deep enough. I want to make a nice, deep, like let's say, okay, great. Let's say I wanted to command prompt right here. Anybody know how to do that? You go up to the address bar, type CMD, and you're in. Wow, that's cool. Yeah, it's cool. I didn't write that, so there's no need to applaud. Right? It's really cool. I mean, genuinely neat. All right, so this is, I'm going to go over here, doc to each side. Right? So if I say dir, I can see that there are three files. And if I were to open up the folder here, I can see here they are, one, two, and the it's not files, but the folder, right? If I were to open it up, I can see I've got the NuGet, the JSON, which is my full dependency graph inside it, right? The full dependency graph so that when I build, it knows what to get out of local cache. And all that stuff has been put in the local cache for me. Then inside of there, I can see that for this platform, it's set, it hasn't built anything yet. So I haven't built anything yet. What do you think the next command is we should do against .NET? I agree, we should build. And so now we've built, everything is beautiful. You can see all the stuff's getting pulled in. There's my DLL, right? There's my PDB as well. Everything's just done for me. This is just like F6 inside Visual Studio, no real magic. Just handy because I can script all this. It's just really, really nice. Easy way to get started if you're trying to teach somebody how to do C#. Why did I say Visual Basic? That's weird. Oh, you know what? Let's just change the topic. All right. All right. So I want to show you a couple of things. I've already installed the SDK. That's the reason all this on the left works. On the right, I just got this thing at the top that says, don't ask again and go to war. Hang on. Let me make sure this is the same one. Oh, there we go. Not now, right? Not now, later. Okay, warning, required assets are there. So Visual Studio Code needs some stuff. What does it need? It needs all the files it needs to give you debugging experience, just like Visual Studio. So I can put a breakpoint and I can debug directly into it. So watch this. Here's Hello World. I haven't run it yet, so let me just show you that it works. .NET. .NET run, right? And Hello World, right? Well, don't clap yet because it's about to get incredible, right? To hold it. I saw all the hands going up and I barely caught you, right? So now I could say var x equals console.readline. By the way, this is Visual Studio Code. Really terrific, right? And I could say, instead of that, it is hello, and then I can put it here, right, x. Right, so now I can have some true interaction. And to make it even better, I add console.beep, right, which is really great. Right, we're a lot closer to shipping than we were before. I don't know if you're going to hear it, to be honest. I don't know if there's audio. Just trust that beep works okay. All right. Now, I'm going to have to say yes up here. I just want you to notice the folder structure over here. I have my bin folder, which because it executed earlier, right, it has to create the bin. It reads from the obj to create the bin. You all knew that already, of course. And now I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to get a new folder. Yes. It's really hard because the delay is funny. Now I have this .vs code, right? Everything there will enable the SDK inside Visual Studio Code, and I get a lot more of a rich experience, right? So now when I go to the debug tab here, or I don't know if it's called tab, but anyway, debug thing here, right? It gives me a lot more options, and I could go over to my code, and I could say, now wait a minute, before you beep, pause, right? That's neat. So now F5 gives me the same experience that I would have had if I were running, you know, on, in the command, in the, if I, if, what am I saying? Thank you. Yes, that's exactly right. F5 gives me the same experience as Visual Studio or running it on the command line. That's exactly right. And let's see. It's pretty tight. I'm going to guess that I am stopped at my line. Oh, this is really tight. I have it bigger for you guys, but I'm going to have to shrink it just a minute. I want to see what it says. Okay. So now you're wondering, wonder what happened just there. And so let me tell you that I do not know how to resolve this issue except for this way. If you have the project already open and Visual Studio Code says, should I add the files? Some reason that just does not do it properly for me. So instead, is it okay that I'm dishonest with you? I think RD, Visual Studio, oh, it's not empty. Remember Deltree? Or that's the way I used to. You don't use that anymore, but right? All right, so now I say code dot, same as before. All I did was remove the stuff, let it do it as I load it. Seems to work perfectly every time that way. There's probably a trick around it, but I don't know what that trick is. And so it's loading. It's going to prompt me right at the top. Yes, I'm going to say, adds Visual Studio Code. Now, I'll show you the two files that are in it, and it's telling me that this is what I'm going to execute, right? That's the important line that doesn't get right the first time. I'm going to go back and make sure this is nice and big so you can see it. Now, when I run it, it's going to stop on my breakpoint right here. I'm confident of it stopping on the breakpoint. All right, it's going to prompt me for some words. I'm going to say Phoenix, PH. I know it's not right. It's just not right. Jerry, you're going off script a little bit. Let's make sure this runs on this side. Hello? It's running over here. Hey, wait, I've got to stop it. It's nice that you guys are here. It's really nice you guys are here. Is it hot in here? It's weird. It's really weird. Ah, I'll tell you what happened. It's cold in Phoenix. I have a jacket on. It's cold. It's one thing I know about Phoenix is it's freezing. All right. Console beep. Everything's right. Right? There's no typo here. Let's try it again. Let's see, .NET run. I gotta get over to Visual Studio because I want you to see the other stuff too. Oh, it's just waiting. It's just waiting for the input. God, come on. Who didn't say that? Oh, golly. All right, hello test. Oh my goodness, terrific. There we go. Now I wanna debug it. I'm just gonna take away the complexity of that for now, right? Just hello, it's just gonna say hello. And there's no breakpoint you'll notice either, so. How about that? That's great. No, I'm going to add the break. That was a mistake. I didn't mean to not add the breakpoint. But you saw it said hello, right? All right. Now, perfect. This is all I wanted you to see. This is it. Why did I have to make it so much more complicated? And showing off all the C# 7, 6, and 7. I don't know why, but I did. And so there it is, right? It's terrific. Now, let's open the same thing inside Visual Studio because this is worth it. I'm going to say, let's see. I'm going to back up from Phoenix, and I'm going to say remove directory PH. There we go. /s. All right, I'm going to delete it, and I'm going to create another one, x this time, because I can do that fast. Make directory y, change directory to y. All right, still empty. I want to show this real quick because it's worth seeing. I could say .NET new, and the type is going to be web. Now, I have all of the scaffolding that I really need to build an ASP.NET site. All the MVP stuff is laid out. You can see there's a controllers folder, and it's ready to go. Now, from my point of view, I open up my IDE, Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio, whatever it is, and I start writing it, and I've got all the pieces that I need, just like File New Project would have done inside Visual Studio. If I have Visual Studio, let's see, I've got it open right here, right? I can say, let me do the same thing so you can see this beautiness. So nice, right? So I've got a console application. I'll just accept it for now. It'd be the same sort of hello world, right? It's exactly the same sort of hello world. But I want to right click and edit the project for you, right? So it's right here, edit console app 2 CS proj. So it's opened up. I haven't had to unload it yet, right? That's what's cool about it. And so I'm going to add a file. In this case, we'll just make it a class file. I won't name it or anything. I'll just add it right there. And so if I were to, so it jumps over, but let me show you, right? No change, no change. Now, what if I needed to remove that file, but I didn't want to delete it? I'm just going to exclude it. We all know what that looks like. Now, if I do that, you can see it's been added right here to the project, so I can at least remove it. Everything that isn't there is added in automatically. And then I could say, well, you could see over on the side, it's not there anymore, right? Because I excluded it, so you don't see it in Solution Explorer. Wouldn't it be neat if I could just delete this, right? Save CS Proj and show back up, and it does, right? That is awesome. It really is live edit of the CS Proj. I know some of you heard me talking about that at Slide. You're like, I don't know about that, but it's true, right? It's really, really true. And then I could go in here, and I could say runtime. What was it? Runtime identifier? Look, I put my notes over here, so it was harder to read. Runtime identifiers. I knew it had an S. I-F-I-I-E-R-S. Nothing wrong with spelling slow. All right. Win10-X64. So from this point forward, every time this builds, it will build as Win10X64. And I can start making it very, very specific. And I can start leveraging things I know are going to be specific for that platform if I need it, right? It's really great. And that means when I start to publish, it'll know how to publish for Win10X64. And I can add x86 if I want to as well. I can then go find not the DLL that runs hosted inside .NET, but I can find the exe that includes .NET inside it. Right, so those are the two things that I want. This is the beginning of that. Now I can go into publish, and I can say I want to publish my release of, you know, it's like -C for release is I think the type, and -R is going to be Win10X86. It'll only publish one for me that way, and I'll see my exe ready for me to run and go in and double click it. Right, it's just as beautiful. Okay, let me make sure I've got everything in mind here. So we saw the commands, we saw creating a new. We saw that new can create a simple console app, a library, or we can go into create a web application. We also saw we can go into CS Proj, start making changes. We have full debug experience in Visual Studio Code. So if you don't have Visual Studio on your Mac, then you can do it this way. If you don't have Visual Studio on Linux, you can do it that way. Or if you just love Visual Studio Code, you can do the same thing on Windows as well and have a full debug experience and step through things and make changes. That's pretty cool. That's really, really cool. It also gives me all the stuff that pulls down from NuGet, including all the componentized .NET framework that we have. .NET, we know now, is componentized on purpose so that we can take out the stuff that's Windows only and we get cross-platform with it as well. And then I can go into the new CS Proj, and then next time I see project.json, I can just make a mental note. I'm going to need to migrate that over, right? No big deal. But that's where we're headed. We're not headed towards towards project.json anymore. We're headed towards CS Proj. And I can go in and make changes if I need to, want to. Probably won't very much, but you can, right? Go make changes without having to unload it. All the tooling is there as well. As of today, today is when we released RC3 for this SDK, and it's ready to go. So you can go download it now. You can go to the .NET blog, and it'll tell you all about it. And more importantly, at its fundamental level, let me go back to slides for a second, because this is where we are. At its fundamental level, these are it when it comes to .NET Core. You've got the framework, that .NET framework that every .NET developer knows how to use to make them more productive, versus Node, right? Node, I'm always using the packet manager to bring stuff in. Well, how am I going to do HTTP? Well, there's packet manager will give you that. Well, how am I going to do, you know, there are a lot of things built in, I realize, but for the most part, it's very, very small and you go and get what you want. That's not the way .NET Core works. .NET Core starts by saying, this is a .NET framework, guys. We've been doing this forever. We've got it built for you. Just come and use it like you already know. And that's what we want, right? That's the mentality. That's the mindset that we use because it's all there and great. We do the abstraction of all the different platforms. You're still writing in the language that your development team already knows, and you don't have to have a whole new set of skills. You're already writing in a language that's already proven, tested, that has all the tooling around it that's absolutely incredible and is not JavaScript. Right? I mean, truly. And more importantly now, we have the CLR going through the same pipeline that you already know, and the option to go directly to the metal if you want to use Core RT. That is .NET Core at its heart, which if you were to just step back and say, what are you guys talking about? You would just say .NET. We're talking about .NET. That's what it is, right? .NET Core just happens to be able to execute on other things. All right. That's the whole deal. That's the whole enchilada I know some of you might have a handful of comments or questions. Scott's over here, almost with the hook before me. And I want to make sure that, do we have time for people to ask a question if they have one?
Let's do questions on Twitter or on email. How can we contact you?
You can contact me. My website is jerrynixon.com. I'm just going to go to slide two real quick. My website's jerrynixon.com, and my entire business card is at the top. So you're welcome to email me, tweet at me, or whatever it is that's right. And if you're interested in UWP development, which also uses .NET Core, you can try template 10 as well and be very productive right out of the gate with building a UWP application.
That is great.
That's the
is that helpful,
way.
You guys? Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, everybody.